on here?
Let's face it, this is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
The Force is with you, young Skywalker. But you are not a Jedi yet.
You are a vain, greedy, cruel boy.
You are an old man and a fool!
You're unworthy!
The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Hey! Take those headphones off! Right now!
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Anybody care about what I want?
I do.
Shut up. Get out.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
Got a bad feeling about this.
This drink, I like it. Another!
No. I am your father.
Guys,
I'm bringing the party to you.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Welcome to episode number 5 of season 3 of WDWNT Mirror Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and joining me is Ron Deanna.
Hey, everybody.
Jack McCarthy.
Howdy, folks.
And Taylor Catcher.
Hello.
On tonight's episode, we're going to be talking about Netflix Iron Fist. We're also going to be talking about the last couple episodes of Rebels Season 3, and we're going to answer some listener email. But before we get to that, let's get right into the news, and here we go. Big news is today they release a brand new Spider-Man Homecoming trailer, and it was pretty damn good.
So, to become an Avenger, are there, like, trials or an interview?
Do me a favor.
Can't you just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man?
Just stay close to the ground.
You're the Spider-Man from YouTube.
Can you summon an army of spiders?
No, Ned, no.
Do you know him, too?
I stole his shield.
Can I try the suit on?
Badass.
The rich and the powerful, like Stark, they don't care about us.
The world's changing, boys.
Time we change, too.
These weapons are crazy dangerous.
Listen, Peter, forget the flying monster guy. There are people who handle this sort of thing.
The illegal weapons barrier was at 230. You missed it.
What if somebody had died?
I was just trying to be like you.
I wanted you to be better. I'm gonna need the suit back.
But I'm nothing without this suit.
If you're nothing without this suit, then you shouldn't have it.
I screwed up.
You need to stop carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders.
I want you to understand. I'll do anything to protect my family. I know you know what I'm talking about.
So don't mess with me. Because I will kill you and everybody you love.
My friends are up there!
That guy is still out there. I just gotta do this on my own.
Just don't do anything stupid, all right?
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I think it was great. There's no one else going to say anything. I'll jump in.
Oh, I thought we were going in order. I was waiting for
me too. I wasn't sure either. I was like, let's go. It was amazing, spectacular, friendly neighborhood. it was good. I'm just going to use jokes that I used on Facebook earlier today. I think that after watching it, I've been thinking about it. I watched it like 5 times, and I think that this movie has the biggest potential to be the best Marvel Cinematic Universe movie to date, because I'm not saying like necessarily this is going to be, but because of the fact that, similar to Guardians, it's its own thing, but unlike Guardians, it has a bigger tie into the other movies than Guardians did. So you kind of have like, you have your cake and you eat it too. Because you can kind of have a singular story about Spider-Man and what he's doing with Iron Man, like you would in the comic books, but it's actually tied to the greater world, and it doesn't seem to have all the baggage that every single iteration of Iron Man or Thor or Avengers seems to have, of like all this weird tension and like, you know, it just seems to be a story about Spider-Man who hasn't dealt with any of that, so he's not privy to that information, and neither are you as the audience. when you're in it, it seems like it might be just like it's fun Spider-Man story that's tied to this bigger thing instead of all of this like, remember third Thor was kind of lame, or like the second Thor movie is kind of lame, and I wonder if how that ties into this movie, and you're kind of just like wondering that. You don't have to worry about any of that with the Spider-Man movie. I don't know. That was long-winded, but that's what I think.
Nah, that's good.
I really like the look of it. I think it's got the right tone, which I think that they lost in Amazing 2. I think they had it at first in, when they brought in the reboot last time, but who knows what happened at Sony, and who knows what's going to happen now with what we hear with, you know, Venom and the animated movie. But it's good to have a mentor, and it's good for him to be young. I mean, he didn't have the mentor in the books originally, but in newer iterations, he's always had that. Like with Ultimate, he had the Avengers were around. He looked up to them because he's a kid, you know. And that's I think the most core thing they need to keep is keep Spider-Man young. Don't make him, you know, a moody, you know, 20-something year old again. We have enough of that with other heroes and other genres. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Keaton looks scary.
Yeah.
Without the armor, he looks scary. He's he looks completely psychotic, which is just great. And it hopefully, you know, is a good turning point for what Sony's been doing, and they don't kind of revert.
I thought it looked very good. The only thing I'm a little bummed about was it looks like Tony Stark takes away his suit.
Yeah.
And he's back to wearing the sweatshirt and almost like the Scarlet Spider outfit, or his homemade outfit. I want to see him in that costume, because that costume looks so damn good on screen. It really does. And, you know, I want to see him in that suit fighting the bad guys. But it really looks good. Michael Keaton does look scary. He really comes across as... when he usually plays the psycho type. And it looks really, really good. I like the little spider tracer that comes out of the chest. I'm not sold on the webbing under the arms so he can glide. I think it goes too far down to his legs. I think it shouldn't go down that far, but that's a nitpick. But it looks like it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, Jack. I mean, like your negatives, that was my thing too, with his webbing under his arms. When I first saw it in the first trailer, I was like, that's too big. I mean, I thought it was just going to be very subtle and not really kind of useful, just kind of decorative, but it looks like it's one of those parasailing sort of things that he could use to kind of float down if he had to. But I love this trailer. I would give it a 9 out of 10. I'd say what doesn't make it a 10 out of 10 is like what you said, Jack. I don't like the fact that he's going back to his old retro costume that he made.
Yeah, because I thought that scene in the like he's changing in the alley and the suit automatically sort of shrink fits onto him. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, that's like the sneakers from Back to the Future. I thought that was kind of cool, really. But yeah, but if you notice, I went through this trailer a couple of times. There's a ton of times he's in that Spider-Man suit. So I think, like, he probably is a clown. He starts probably getting arrogant, and then Tony realizes that maybe he made a mistake giving him the suit too early because he's still a kid, which I still think is wrong. I don't think he should say, you know what, give me the suit back. I mean, that's just so wrong. I just don't get it. But I guess he's got to prove himself to Tony that he doesn't need his suit and that he's still a hero. But yeah, like Jack said, I love that suit. I think it is so cool. And I noticed when I was watching the ferry scene, when he's first on the ferry and he kind of webs a couple of guys, there's a guy running and he shoots a web at him. And I don't know if it's an exploding web or if it ricochets or if it curves or whatever, but it's really weird. I think it's an exploding web. You know, as he's walking by, it kind of explodes and covers him. I think that's new. I mean, I've never seen that in the comics before. But that suit looks so damn good. I really do like it.
It really does look good. I thought the suit in Amazing Spider-Man 2 was very good as well.
But this one, I don't know. This just looks cool.
You know what I don't like, and this is another thing too. And before you start jumping down my throat, I don't like Ned Leeds as Gonki. I like the actor that portrays him. I like that he's got a buddy and everything like that. But I feel bad, almost like that they're ripping off Miles Morales as Spider-Man. I felt that they should have saved that for him, since that's, you know, his kind of buddy. I don't know. I just think that's wrong. I mean, it's kind of like he did it first in Ultimate Spider-Man with Miles Morales, where he had this, like, chubby little buddy that kind of knew his secrets. They should have just left it there. And who knows if they'll do it in the animated film, so it's going to be Miles Morales. But I do kind of feel bad in a way. And when I look at it, I'm like, you know, I guess they could have made this Miles Morales instead of Peter Parker. It's probably still would have worked. But I'm still glad that we get to see Peter Parker first and then probably Miles later. But the other thing is a shocker. I just don't think we need him in this movie. I saw him for a quick second, you know, doing something. I don't know if he teams up with the Vulture, if he's separate, if it's just like a separate crime scene, kind of like with the Rhino that was in Amazing Spider-Man 2. But I don't like the fact when there's too many villains. I'm just hoping it's very, very minute and he's not in it for a long time, because too many villains leads to problems, like they did with Batman and Robin and numerous other movies. And I guess, yeah, the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
I wouldn't worry too much about the Shocker. I think he's just a throwaway villain to make a fight scene that's going to advance the story a little.
Well, I hope so. We'll see, though. It was also cool to see Captain America in there. And he's in his, like, original Avengers outfit that was in the Avengers movie, which was kind of weird. And it looks like it's like an ad showing, like, he's advertising a fitness challenge, the Captain America fitness challenge. That's pretty cool. So you can officially say Captain America and Iron Man are in this movie.
I'm surprised they'd be airing, you know, Cap stuff at the time this is supposed to be set, given he's a wanted fugitive.
He's probably a wanted fugitive to the government, but they don't want to make that a public thing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to make it seem like Captain America isn't Captain America right now. He's just, that's why he's, you know, probably recreated weird scenes for this fitness thing, and people just think he's doing stuff, Avenger things, places, you know.
But I was going to say the one thing about the Shocker earlier, and I realized my headset was muted in two places, so I couldn't talk. I think they're like a gang. I think they are going to be all, like, related criminals, so.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like that, because, like, they're using some kind of, like, shocking sort of equipment on the ferry, and the Vulture even looks like he's got something that kind of resembles the Shocker's equipment. So, and then Jack's buddy, what's his name? Is it the Tinkerer?
Oh, yes.
He's probably pulling the string somehow. He's making a lot of money off of him.
I think they gave away too much in this trailer.
Yeah, I agree, Taylor. I mean, we could have done without seeing Captain America. We didn't have to even know that he took away his suit.
I could have also gone without knowing that Iron Man was going to save that boat.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that too.
That was the biggest one for me. Like, yeah, I know that getting the suit taken away, it's kind of like they're just showing you kind of the story arc that's taking place. But, you know, it's kind of like, oh, he has the thing. He's, you know, kid, like kind of like an Icarus story. Flew too close to the sun. He has to be, you know, put down a little bit or whatever. Iron Man's playing dad. Whatever you want to have the story be. But I was like, I mean, because I would have loved that scene of not knowing that when he's screwing up like that Iron Man was going to just show up out of nowhere and just save that boat, you know? I think that would have been a really, really cool in-the-theater moment that is now real ruined by this trailer.
Yeah, you're right, Taylor. And it's unfortunate. That's what trailers do nowadays. It's like they'll release, like, three official trailers, and by the third trailer, you basically know the whole movie. It's like they don't care. It's like they want to pull you into the movie theater no matter what. I mean, if they have to give away, you know, the whole movie, like what they did with Terminator Genesis when that trailer came out. But I think, like, they could just release one Spider-Man trailer, put out a couple of posters, And I'd still go, and I'm sure a ton of other people would still go. Same thing with Star Wars. All you have to do is put up on the marquee, Star Wars Episode 8. Don't even call it The Last Jedi. It's going to make billions of dollars. You don't need all these multiple trailers.
Yeah, it's like, who are they trying to sell? Everyone's already sold. We're all going to go see Spider-Man.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're all happy about that. Spider-Man comes out July 7th. It's getting closer. So another trailer was released this weekend, and it was the Justice League trailer.
We have to be ready. You, me, the others. There's an attack coming from far away.
Not coming, Bruce. It's already here. The others. Where are they?
Arthur Curry, the Aquaman. It's on him.
Organic and biomechatronic body parts. He's a cyborg.
You should probably move.
Barry Allen.
Whoever you're looking for, it's not me. He's a Batman.
They said the Age of Heroes would never come again.
It has to.
What are your superpowers again?
I'm rich.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
My turn.
Come together. Right now. Come together. Right now.
Shall we?
It's good to see you playing well with others again. Just like a bat. I dig it.
Maybe temporary.
Yeah!
And I know that's Taylor's speciality. So I guess mm-hmm. you can go first there, Taylor.
Oh, me first? Who would have thought? It looks really fun. Looks like they figured out that they shouldn't be as dark, but it still has so much Snyder all over it that it's got the Snyder filter, and then it's got like the most green screen I've seen since 300. And 300 was like 12 years ago, or maybe more. I don't know how long ago 300 was. It was a long time ago, and I thought that like we realized that's not a good idea in the world where we have HD, like. 300 doesn't look that much better on Blu-ray than it did on DVD because everything in the background is a screen that they digitally put in. You know, I guess like Gerard Butler's muscles look better. But as far as like depth and things that you can get from either 3D or from 4K or from 1080p, it's lost when you have that much green screen. And it kind of just bummed me out to see that like how much of this movie is CG. In general, but it does look really cool as far as like parademons. Were they fighting on Apocalypse? Maybe. The Flash looks really fun. I like that. I still maintain that when that first trailer for the Justice League, it not only shows Barry Allen using the Speed Force for standard speed, but it also shows him tapping into the mental Speed Force in which he could think faster than a normal person. Because if you notice, the first time when Batman throws that batarang, he moves quick to catch it, but then like. It moves even slower again when he starts thinking about everything that's going on around him and like, and just like the fact that they go that deep into the lore of the Speed Force, even though only me notices that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, it's the first trailer, it shows it really well. Like, you'll notice that first he moves like, and then it moves even slower after he moves quickly because it's showing him thinking through everything and like grabbing the batarang really slowly. Because he's like, oh, he's Batman. He's like putting it all together. And that's a power that they introduced in the New 52 that the Flash had, where he can think through every scenario because he can think with the Speed Force instead of just using the Speed Force physically. That's cool. They showed Barry's dad. So, like, they're definitely going to have some of that. It feels like they're going to have to do a lot of weird origin story crap in this movie, though, because it's going to have to show... I mean, they showed Cyborg before his accident, so they're going to have to show the accident that caused Cyborg to happen, but that already happened in the world of Batman versus Superman, because, you already saw Dr. Silas Stone using the Mother Box to turn Cyborg into Cyborg in Batman vs. Superman. So it's kind of like, we're going to have, like, is it going to be just like Suicide Squad, where it's like this weird montage in the beginning of all the different characters and their backstories? Or, like, how are they going to handle that? Aquaman looks awesome. Cooler than Aquaman's ever looked in his entire life in this movie. Riding on the Batmobile like it's a freaking wave. It's awesome. Like, this movie looks like it's going to have a lot of sweet moments, but...
But that's what Snyder does. I read an article about it. Like, he does moments. He doesn't do stories.
And it looks like it's got great moments, but the thing I'm wondering is there any story in this? And also, is Superman the bad guy? Is Superman just going to show up at the end? Are they actually going to try to hide the third act from the audience, or are they going to give it away again in the next trailer? I don't know.
I would put money on him showing up in the next trailer at this point, especially if response is tepid.
Yeah. Well, I thought response was pretty good for this trailer. I mean, generally...
But like, if the tracking numbers don't go to where they want it, they'll throw him in the next trailer.
That, they keep ruining, like, you know, and then people are just going to pick it apart. The more you show, the more people can pick apart. I'd rather just be surprised. But I guess in DC's defense, they really need people to want to see this movie because of how critically bad the other ones were. And rumors are Wonder Woman isn't very good either, so...
Yeah, I mean, we've been told that, you know, the whole third act of Wonder Woman has actually been rewritten and redone because they, you know, had Ares as, like, a cloud, because that worked so well for Galactus. But they finally had to, like, personify him in some way.
They had him as a cloud again? What do they think? Who ever thinks that's a good idea? We even sort of complained about it with Dormammu, even though he was, like, almost a person. Like, he was more Galactus-y, comic book-style Galactus as than Dormammu.
We're just making up adjectives, aren't we?
Yep. That's what I do. I don't know. I think it looks like they've gotten the characters down pretty well. Like, Batman seems pretty Batman-y, and they say that he makes him a full hero or something, so maybe that means he stops killing people or something in this movie. Wonder Woman looks cool. Like, they all had really cool moments in that trailer. I'm just worried about the Snyderification of it. Sorry. Didn't mean to be negative.
No, I mean, that's fine, Taylor.
It looked overall pretty good. There's something, like, you said Aquaman looked the best, but, I mean, I thought he looked cool, but, like, Joe's going to complain about the way he looks compared to being in the books. We know that.
Yep.
But I think his personality, like, he's not the jump into the fight, wisecracky kind of guy. I think that's more of a problem than who's, you know, than how he actually looks. Because I thought the armor looked right. I thought, like, he's had long hair plenty of times. The beard's been in and out.
I mean, I disagree. Did you read? This looks heavily based on Justice League War, the animated movie, and or Justice League Volume 1 and 2 of the New 52. Did you read those?
Yeah, he's still moody. He's still kind of reluctant.
He does jump out of the water when they're arguing who should be the leader of the Justice League. Command with his brain, like his mind, a bunch of sharks to jump out of the water, grab some parademons midair, stab one with his trident, shove it down to the ground, and go, "I vote me."
No, but I think he's too quippy, and so was Batman. Way too quippy.
Batman was too quippy. I give you that. Batman's not quippy. Batman is not.
Barry and Cyborg should be very quippy. Yeah. If they make Wonder Woman quippy, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, she definitely can't be quippy. It's a lot of quips. They're trying to be too Marvel-y, you know? Like, I feel like they're not... I don't know who they're talking to or what feedback they're trying to take, but I don't think they understand what is good about DC or the reason why we like DC and how it can be different but still good compared to Marvel. Like, all the characters don't need to be fun and quippy to be good, you know? Everyone doesn't... Like, Iron Man and Batman are not the same character. They have similar characteristics, in fact, like, they are rich and use, like, tech to do stuff, but, you know, Batman is not Iron Man, you know? Yeah,
but everything else, like, the action looked better. We could get rid of the filters, everybody'd be happy, but it looks more comic booky than the others have.
Yeah, agreed.
I miss Superman.
No, I do too.
I have a tough time with the Snyder movies in general, and the Justice League without seeing Superman standing in the middle of all of them, it's just not going to get me psyched up until I see that big S and the red cape waving behind him.
You might not see that, too.
And that's just it. And Snyder made some comment earlier today. I saw a post on IO9, about, we wanted to make it feel like there was a sacrifice and when he resurrects,
No, I'm saying, isn't he going to be in his black outfit, possibly?
I don't know, but it's Snyder. He could be all in black, for all we know.
I think they hinted at that, too, didn't they?
When Superman came back, he was in the Kryptonian, regeneration suit, which is black with a silver S.
Yeah, didn't Henry Cavill kind of hint at that, too? Like, didn't he tweet, a picture of, a black S or something like that?
He did.
And then
did do that.
That moment when he comes back in Man of Steel 25, that just Metropolis over my dead body, I would kill to see that moment on screen.
I don't think he's got the chops to do that, though.
But I know you guys seem to have liked the trailer a lot more than I did. I really just saw it. Whatever weird music they were playing in the background, that also distracted me from a lot of stuff.
The Beatles?
Come Together?
It was Aerosmith.
It wasn't the Beatles. It was something else.
No, it was...
Maybe they were doing
Come
someone
Together
else doing the
right
Beatles
now.
Song.
It was the Beatles song. It was a cover of the Beatles.
Yeah, but it was Aerosmith doing it, though.
No, I don't think that was the Aerosmith.
No.
I don't know. I think that was Aerosmith. I could be wrong, but I watched it a couple of times. Yeah, look it up, see if it was or not.
Yeah, but I was very indifferent about it. I was waiting for that moment when I was like, yeah, when all of a sudden something happens and then Superman just sort of drops down from the sky or something. That would have gotten me a lot more excited than this trailer did. And I'm still indifferent to the whole Justice League movie. I hope I'm wrong, because the more good superhero movies out there, the better comic books and interest in that kind of properties continues and grows. But I'm just not feeling this movie, guys.
It was Junkie XL and Gary Clark Jr.
Okay. Well, Junkie XL, he does the music. Man,
he did Batman.
Steel.
He did the Batman.
Batman
vs
Superman.
He
did the Wonder Woman and Batman themes. They kept. Was it Hans Zimmer?
Yeah. Was it Mad Max that he did? That first did too.
But yeah, he does very driving, distorted electronic guitar kind of sounds. Like the Wonder Woman theme. Is She With You or whatever it's called? Was probably the absolute best thing about Batman v Superman, and they're not playing that up enough in the Wonder Woman trailer until the end, but I guess it doesn't really fit for the time period that they're in. It's more of a classic soundtrack. Probably make more sense.
I'd say, alright, for me, I'm going to tell you what I like the most so far. I really like The Flash. I like this guy who's playing The Flash. I know it's weird, when I first saw him, it's like, why doesn't he have blonde hair? For me, it's got to be comic accurate, but I kind of like this kid. I think he does a good job. He seems a bit like the comic relief a little bit. He seems likable, and I don't watch the Flash TV series. I've watched a couple episodes. I actually like this Flash better. I think that the costume up close kind of looks a little wonky. There's so many parts to it. It's like the Tin Man, but from a distance he looks really cool. I like the whole lightning techniques that he has, and he's got a lot to compete with. He's got to compete with this Flash, and he's got to compete with Quicksilver in the movies too, so it's going to be tough. But I think so far he's doing a decent job of what I've seen with the Flash special effects. Cyborg, I like the actor. I like when he said, I think you better get out of here. It felt real. It felt like he was actually acting, which is kind of rare, for some of these DC movies. I'm not sure what I think about his suit. I'm a little optimistic for him. There's definitely going to be somebody that's going to steal the movie. I'm not sure who it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be Wonder Woman this time. I think it's either going to be Aquaman or Cyborg. Maybe the Flash. In regards to what Ron was saying with Aquaman, I got a problem with him. I just don't like him. To me, he looks too caveman-ish. And I'd read the comics, like, I read, like, when he lost his arm and he had the hook, and at that point he had the beard and all that stuff. He was more like something out of Moby Dick or Captain Ahab or something, but I just don't like the way he looks. I just think he looks very grungy. He looks very messy. I do like his outfit, though, like what Ron said. I think that they kind of nailed that pretty well. But I don't know if Jason Momoa is going to sell me as Aquaman. I'm sure most of the people that saw this trailer, they aren't really familiar with a lot of the heroes and everything. I'm sure they didn't know that that was Aquaman. And I'm sure there are probably a lot of people that are mostly familiar with Aquaman, with the blonde hair, you know, the goofy kind of Aquaman. It just looks too radically different for me. I like J.K. Simmons as Jim Gordon. I thought he looked pretty good. Just got a taste of him, but I thought he looked pretty good. My biggest complaint is I think this looks too much like the first Avengers movie. You have Steppenwolf and the Parademons is kind of like Loki and the Chitauri. That's what it looks like to me. It's like these like minions, the Chitauri, are just like the Parademons invading. Instead of New York, it looks like it's more of a worldwide invasion, though. Because it looks like from the trailer, like they might be, like the Amazons are involved, and they might be fighting on Themyscira or different parts of the world. But it just looks too much like that, and that they're all coming together like the Avengers did. I just hope that it's not going to be a duplicate of what we had seen. And of course, Ben Affleck to me sucks. I just don't like him at all. I think they should replace him right away. And like I told you guys in the email, I wouldn't be surprised if he was in rehab during this picture, because he just doesn't look like he wants to be there. I just think to him it's just another paycheck. I really do hope he pulls out of being Batman when they do this Batman trilogy, because I am not buying him as Batman. First 30 seconds of this trailer, it's all Ben Affleck. That just annoys the hell out of me. It's like that they think that he is the man, and he didn't do much for Batman v Superman. And with Zack Snyder, like you guys said, he doesn't learn anything, and that's what bothers me. It's like he doesn't care what people say. It's like, well, we don't like the blue filter. I don't care. I like it. I'm doing it. We don't like the excessive use of green screen. I don't care. I like it. I'm doing it. See, at least with J.J. Abrams, before he did Star Wars, people were ragging him with Star Trek. It's like, that lens flare, dude, you gotta calm down on that. And he was like, wow, now that you mention it, it was a lot. It was excessive. And he calmed down on it. At least he listens to the fans. This guy, he doesn't care. It's like, I am the genius. This is my vision. You know, Batman vs. Superman was the greatest movie ever made. It was better than anything that Marvel could have done. That you guys didn't like it, that's your problem. You know, that's how I feel he is. Anyway, I mean, the trailer was okay. It didn't give me much hope for it to be, you know, the DC's Messiah. But we'll see. Speaking of, I read the other day, Suicide Squad is like DC's highest grossing movie ever. I mean, that's just sad.
Well, it sold really well with the kids. The teens, the Hot Topic teens. Really like that movie.
I guess so, but that's just sad. Alright, on to the next thing. So Chris Evans may be calling quits after Avengers 4. I mean, he was recently talking to Collider, and he said that it's really not up to him. His contract is up after Avengers 4. I guess Marvel hasn't reached out to him. It's kind of sad. I mean, I think he is a good Steve Rogers / Captain America. I feel he gets a bum rap because Robert Downey Jr., they're like, oh, don't leave us. Here's another $100 million, and it's like, Chris Evans, it's like, do we really need him? We can always replace him, I guess, with maybe Sebastian Stan, or Anthony Mackie. Just kind of feel bad for him.
He wanted out a while ago, and then they threw more money at him, so, like, he was fighting to, like, have those, like, cameos count against his 7-picture deal at some point, because he really did get kind of screwed on his initial contract. Like, everybody but Downey did, and one of the things Downey fought for was actually just as much, like, to get the other people bumped up when he agreed to come back, which is something to respect for him if, you know, the stories were true. But, I mean, not that he's not going to make a ton on his own.
I just wanted to backtrack really quick. kind of going back to Justice League and Marvel, we have, like, Ben Affleck is Batman, Henry Cavill is Superman, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man, and Chris Evans is Captain America. Out of those, who do you think portrays the character the best?
I think Chris Evans does a great job as Captain America. He seems the more close to the book, whereas, like, Robert Downey Jr. and Tony Stark, Tony Stark's in the comics is eventually came to the point where he was doing Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, he was more serious.
Not the other
than
way
the
around, but I'd have to say Chris Evans, I think, does the best job on the character he's playing versus the comic book version.
Yeah, Downey does a good job, and he kind of exaggerated some of Tony's traits, but Tony was never that white. I mean, he was like the wisecracky drunk, not the always has a, you know, witty kind of comment. Like, he wasn't a fun character until Downey took him over, and then they kind of fixed that a little bit in the books, too.
Yeah.
But Evans nails what makes Cap Cap with, you know, that it's that more, like, you just see the moral, like, Cap's version of moral fiber, which isn't everybody else's, just ooze out of Evans there. And it is that right, that I'm going to do the right, what I think is the right thing, no matter what. And it just, everything, it comes out of him in every moment, every speech, every look.
I agree with that. I just think that he portrays Captain America in a way that I don't think anyone since Christopher Reeve has portrayed Superman, if that makes any sense. Like, when Christopher Reeve is Superman, you're kind of like, yeah, like, this guy is a good guy. And he represents truth, justice, and the American way, I suppose, or at least the American way as it was written in the comic books that back then. And the same thing with Chris Evans' portrayal of Cap. Like, he feels like Cap, and I think that Chris Evans has grown as an actor, too, because you can really see, like, what Ron was saying, like, him really thinking through things sometimes on the screen of, like, is this the right thing to do? And then doing it.
So. Yeah, and I was going to say it would either be Robert Downey or Chris Evans, but I guess my ultimate point is they kind of miscast Batman and Superman in the DC Universe because they still could have taken off. You know, they could have made that character their own. I mean, again, it had a lot to do with the director, because the director, what he did to Superman, I guess, wasn't fair to Cavill. But it's just amazing when you think about it. The two biggest superheroes out there, the three biggest superheroes are Batman, Superman, and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like Marvel has gotten, like, lesser superheroes right than DC has.
And DC, like, when they weren't paying attention, like, Batman Begins was not a major, like, wasn't expected to be what it was. And when they kind of let a really good director give a good actor, you know, the right part for it, I mean, Bale was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think. I know people make fun of the voice and everything, but I mean, I know this kind of sounds like hipster retconning, but I do remember walking out of seeing American Psycho and going, that's how I want to see Batman played. The total playboy as Wayne and the complete psychopath when he's in the other mode, and he just nailed both of those.
Yep. Yeah, no, I really liked his performance too.
Yeah, I mean, Dark Knight Rises had plenty of issues, and the way he was written was part of them, but the first two movies, I mean, are fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
Batman Begins is my favorite of the three, for sure.
Anyway, I guess there's not much to say other than we're hoping that he comes back after Avengers 4, but we'll see. Keeping our fingers crossed. The story out now that Sony will be releasing possibly an R-rated Venom movie in 2018, and it's not connected to the MCU. It's going to be something all of its own. It's supposed to be released October 25th, 2018. And the writers for this mess are the writers behind The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And we also have Amy Pascal, Avi Arvid. Everyone that screwed up that Spider-Man franchise is back for Venom. And
in
also,
their defense, that was their plan anyway, right? Like, that was what they were all like. the guy, the people behind Amazing Spider-Man had this entire Spider-Man universe of movies planned out, and then they just got nixed when Andrew Garfield, whether it was Andrew Garfield's fault or not, whatever happened, and the fact that they just totally cut that series short, it everyone working on that project got kind of screwed over, I guess. So it's kind of interesting. It's not like, I feel like this isn't like they're giving them a new project. I think they're just putting them back on the project they were originally on.
And I think caring about the rating is not important on either end, either from us or the writers. Like, if the writers want to write a story that needs to be R-rated, write it that way. If you know it doesn't need to be, don't push it too far.
Yeah.
Let's look at they're going off the success of Deadpool, and Logan was R, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It had to be.
Yeah.
There was no way that many decapitations was not R. And they're looking at that and going, I guess we could do this. And that seems to be their driving force. Now, let's try and make a good Venom story, which they're going to go over what people think who the character is and not who he ended up being. Is like, he wasn't just this Spider-Man villain. The only thing he didn't really like was Spider-Man. He wanted, like, Eddie Brock kind of wanted to be an anti, like, he wanted to be a hero that was just driven to, you know, being more Punisher-esque by the suit.
Yeah, I just don't care at all. Like, there's already, I hate to say this because I'm the biggest fan of comic book movies, but, like, the fact that, we have 5 comic book movies this year. 5. 3 from Marvel, 2 from DC, and then that's not even counting whatever, like, you know, John Wick 2 feels like a comic book movie, it's an action movie, but, like, you know, it's kind of weird that we have 5 just this year. And then 2018 was going to be, like, what, Avengers, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, I don't know, like, whatever else. It just seems like I think people put too much stake into, like, Venom and Carnage. Do they need their own movies? I don't know. Could they be a really cool Spider-Man story? Yeah, but I'd rather see Kraven's last, you know, last hunt or whatever it was called, on the big screen than a Venom story. I love Venom, like, don't get me wrong, but it just seems like them pushing for, like, what's a cool Spider-Man character that we can make rated R? Well, you're better off with Carnage, honestly, if you really wanted to do that. Because he has to be, he's a serial killer with a symbiote suit. But I don't know. The news of that, I was just like, ah. And that it's not connected, almost anything that's not connected to the other stuff at this point, I'm like, why bother? Why?
But you know, you're absolutely right. If they wanted to use a Spider-Man character for a rated R movie, you're right. You could turn Carnage into a horror movie right off the bat.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have your... You have your Psycho movie, but instead of running around with, I don't know, an axe or a knife like Michael Myers, he's got this crazy alien suit that just lets him make weapons out of his body. I mean, you're right. That's a classic character for a rated R horror superhero movie.
And I still think that they should, if they're going to make the Batman, let's say, I wish they would have gone with Ridley Scott, because if you just did Alien... But instead of the alien being a xenomorph, the alien is the Batman, and it's in Arkham Asylum instead of a spaceship in space, and all the villains are terrified that the Batman is coming for them. That's a great movie, but they got this other guy instead. But, like, think about, like, if you took the horror aspects of Alien and just applied it to Batman, you don't even really need to see Batman. Like, you could just see the fear. The movie would be about the fear villains have of Batman, not about... some BS Batman stuff. That would be what we would want. Like, that would be the ideal Batman movie. If you were going to make a closed, contained one night in Arkham, Batman has to round those villains up, and it's kind of more about the villains, and then, like, the villain for the villains is Batman, right? So you're rooting for the bad guy. And that would be, or in the plot-wise, the bad guy, right? Obviously, Batman's a good guy. That would be cool. But they got, I don't know, whatever this other guy was.
Matt Reeves.
Yeah, whatever he did, I don't even remember.
He did Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, which, you know, I love Planet of the Apes. Like, my name comes from Planet of the Apes, but still kind of like, why is that guy the Batman guy? What has he done? Like, what does Planet of the Apes make me think? That guy, great for Batman. I mean, I could be wrong. It could be great. But it's the same thing with this. Like, why are they choosing Venom? Because he's a more popular character than Carnage? Probably. And then they're just going to make Venom like Carnage because Carnage is the character they should be using. And I'll probably be stoked when I see it on big screen, but they better get a weirdly buff dude to be Eddie Brock, or I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah. That was the worst part of it, is like, oh, we want that guy from that 70s show, and it looks like they picked the wrong one.
Yeah. Well, I think even if they picked Ashton Kutcher, that would have been a problem, too.
He looks more Brock. He looks like
a guy named Brock more than the other guy.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with it is not connected to the MCU, which means Tom Holland will not be in this movie.
Well, did you read that thing today that said Tom Holland is only going to be in two separate Spider-Man movies as part of the MCU, and then he's no longer part of the MCU anymore? So I read an article today about that.
Oh, really?
Which is weird. Which is like a weird thing to be like, I mean, like the borrowedness of the whole thing is like, yeah, we'll let him be in the sequel to Homecoming. With the exception of the Avengers movies, the only other movie that Spider-Man, that Tom Holland is allowed to be in or something that isn't related to the MCU. Like, everything else after that won't be part of the MCU, but it seems weird to cut off your connection.
Is that official, or is that just a rumor?
I don't know. It was a headline, to be honest, so you could probably cut everything I just said, but it'd be dumb. But then if they're doing their own separate thing and they want to do a Spider-Man universe and just like not worry about the other stuff, then Tom Holland could be the Spider-Man. But I just can't imagine, because he'll be maybe college by then. Dealing with Carnage or Venom seems a little rough for young Peter.
I think Sony's going to implode on itself at a certain point. Like, anything but consumer products, I feel, is just going to go out the window for them. I don't think they ever figured out how to handle that studio.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing, too. It's like, Amy Pascal and Avi Arad are back for this stuff, and Amy Pascal was behind the whole email scandal. I think she was like in charge of the movie division, and they gave her walking papers, but they kind of kept her as a consultant. And by them bringing her back, it's like, well, we owe her. And then Avi Arad, you know, he was a huge problem with Marvel all the way back in the day. I think he was somewhat responsible for Marvel being broken up too, like with all the movie rights going to different movie companies. I know the people at Marvel can't stand that guy, and to bring him back, like, because he really wasn't, they didn't want him involved with anything with Civil War. I think he might be an executive producer for Spider-Man Homecoming, but it's something really minor. It just sucks that they're bringing that back, and again, they haven't learned from their mistakes. Like, it's almost like, well, they're family. It's like, we can't get rid of family, even if they screw up. This whole Venom movie's not going to work without Spider-Man, and I can see them being that stupid, where they're like, well, we won't have Spider-Man in this, because we want to just focus on the Venom character. And I don't know, I don't think people are going to want to see that. And then shortly after that, we learn that they're doing a Black Cat Silver Sable crossover movie. And again, it's like, let's just pump the hell out of this franchise. We own Spider-Man. We're going to just start making movies from characters from that franchise. And this is also like a desperate call after seeing how successful Suicide Squad was with Harley Quinn, and like they're coming out with Gotham City Sirens, and now they're like, hey, we got Black Cat and Silver Sable. We'll get a couple hot girls to play them, and then everybody's happy.
Yeah, I just think that I think studios don't understand why people choose characters and like them.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem. It's kind of like Harley Quinn, for people that don't understand comic books, Harley Quinn and Joker are like an actual love story that makes no sense. But for anyone who's read a comic book, they also understand that Harley Quinn has broken free of the Joker and is now a very strong female character. And like a really good book to read because she's so strong and like against the Joker, and now her and Ivy are kind of an item, which is kind of interesting as well. But it's kind of just like Harley Quinn has been popular because of the cartoon. Like, there was nothing that the Batman the Animated Series created Harley Quinn, and so Harley Quinn was such a big part of that show that she's so much bigger in that show than Black Cat ever has been in any of the Spider-Man cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, I watched the Spider-Man cartoon, and I can tell you very little about Black Cat, except she's pretty much Catwoman. But
she was interesting in the comics, like when she was dating Peter during I mean, that time.
Sure, but do I want to see a movie with them in it? Just her? No, not even a little bit. Like, I almost don't even want to see a movie about Venom. And that's weird. I'd love to see a Spider-Man movie that had Venom as the bad guy. I'd love that. But a Venom movie? Eh.
Yeah, but this goes back to, and we've talked about this before, that you can have a hero movie and multiple whatever you want, villains or whatever. The villains don't usually work as well on their own. It's the same thing as Boba Fett. Boba Fett is cool because he showed up and he went against the heroes. But a movie just on him by himself, I can't see it. Black Hat and Silver Sable, unless, like Joe said, you want to make a movie, they're going to get two hot girls, they're going to duke it out. You know, that actually seems more feasible to me than a Venom movie. Because the Black Hat could steal something and from Silver Sable's country, because I think her whole economy is based on mercenaries or something, that you can at least have a little bit more of a direction just by the character backgrounds for a story. But same thing, like you're saying, Taylor, I can't see anybody really calling for a Black Cat Silver Sable movie.
Yeah, it seems like a desperate grab, and I know that this has nothing to do with it because they don't own these properties, but if they want to make a great female-led comic book movie, that with the exception of Captain Marvel, like, you know, do Squirrel Girl or something like that. That comic is real good. I'm just saying, like, you could, or even, you know what, a better option, honestly, even
Birds
though
of Prey.
In Marvel, I'm trying to go for, right? Like, or like, you know, even Gwenpool, which I would not want, but I still think it's more marketable than Black Cat or Spider-Gwen. Do that. Make your own Spider-Gwen universe. Like, fine, I'll go see that movie. Like, make it not related to Spider-Man. Make it its own thing, because she's in an alternate dimension anyway. Now she's in the real dimension, I know, but still.
Wait for an announcement next week.
Spider-Gwen would be a better option than Black Cat.
Or, heck, you can do Spider-Woman. I mean, what they're doing with that book, it's like an action comedy anyway right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Great read. But it's more like an action comedy than anything else.
Yeah, they're together now, right? Spider-Woman and Gwenpool are, like, hanging out. Not Gwenpool, Spider-Gwen.
But, like, Black Cat is barely a B... She's probably a C-list character. Like, she's just she is nothing but a less combat-ready Catwoman ripoff. And Silver Sable is barely a D-list character. I mean, I think more people know who Ned Leeds is than know who Silver Sable is.
Yeah. By the way, Jack, thanks for reminding me of the solo Boba Fett movie. I think that kind of depressed me a little bit.
Yeah, I'd rather not remember that. I think that Boba Fett's cool because we didn't know anything about him. We know too much about Boba Fett now.
Yeah.
Already.
Oops. Yeah, but or even better than Boba Fett, the Punisher. You know, I'd love to see a Spider-Man movie with the Punisher in it. I thought the Punisher was fantastic on Daredevil on Netflix, but a solo Punisher movie just doesn't appeal to me. I want to see him going up against one of the superheroes, not off on his own story.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'd love to see Punisher in a Spider-Man movie. That'd be pretty cool. All right, so that's the end of the news. So let's get into the first topic we're going to talk about, and that is Iron Fist on Netflix recently premiered. And some of us watched the whole season. Some of us watched a couple episodes.
Some of us hasn't watched any of it.
I watched 10 minutes because I've been in Hyrule the entire rest of the last few weeks.
God, that game is so good.
Wait, which one really what have you been playing?
Zelda. Breath of the Wild.
Oh, Zelda. Okay.
It was fantastic. It really was. I'm almost done with it.
I'm not even close to done with it, so no spoilers.
All right, speaking of spoilers, getting into Iron Fist here, I kind of saw your review of it on Comic Chats with Gat. And, ladies and gentlemen, we have an angry Taylor, which is very rare.
Yeah, Iron Fist sucked. That show is not good. Just don't watch it, Jack. Just save yourself 13 hours. Just save yourself 13 hours of your life. Because you know what? Like, I wanted to watch it, and I wanted it to prove all the haters wrong and all the reviewers wrong. Just like, Batman vs. Superman Extended Edition did, because that's a what a great film. But the show was like pretty meh, like 6.57 out of 10 all the way through. So I was like, that's not so bad. Like, it's fine. It's not like, it's not Luke Cage. It's not Daredevil. It's not Jessica Jones. But it's serviceable. And then that last episode was just so bad. They took everything that was already bad about the show and just like cranked it up to 11 in that last episode and gave you one cool Iron Fist punchy moment, but everything else was just like blarg.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I saw the first episode, and again, I was expecting the worst, and I didn't think the first episode was that bad.
The first episode was fun. I liked the way they were portraying him as kind of like this wide-eyed, naive guy who lived in a place that he knows existed, and so when he tells people, oh no, Kun Lun, you know, like, you know, I punched a dragon and it only opens every 15 years, but like, he knew it as real, and so he was never weird to tell people about it because he didn't understand, because he got there when he was 10, right, or whatever, however old he was supposed to be. Yeah. And so he always knew it as real, and so it wasn't crazy. So he's like, oh, it's just me, you know, no big deal, like, hey, what's up? And you're kind of like, okay, this seems fine. But he just, his naivete started being more portrayed as he was too immature. I guess it became more immature than naive. And so he just became like an immature man baby, and just like with like people lying to him, he's all sorts of upset and like trying to figure out how to kill his parents or whatever, or his company, and he's just so whiny. Not just whiny, it's just like he has these temper tantrums that are super dumb and just like, ugh. It was like if Arrow season 1 was worse than it already. Arrow is not, I love Arrow, but it's not like that's a good show. This was like bad Arrow. Like, the whole season was basically Arrow season 1 if you took John Barrowman's character and split him up into three different characters. Yeah.
Do you think there's like a problem with the character itself?
I think that Danny Rand needs to be, he needed to just show up in outfit, like, ready to go. He doesn't need this weird, because Danny Rand is supposed to be the greatest martial artist in the Marvel universe, like, the best. And so even without his Iron Fist, which he pretty much used only to punch doors open in the show, and he has two Iron Fists, but they almost never show him with two. They almost showed us. They showed us what a real Iron Fist looks like, even in outfit, in a weird, like, captured video from 1945 in the show or whatever. But it's like he wasn't even that good at martial arts, and he hardly did any good martial arts. The best fight was near the end against a drunken master who apparently was a guy that was actually up to be Iron Fist. And you're like, well, why don't we choose the guy that actually knows martial arts, does cool stuff? Because, and even watching that battle, I'm not sure how the Drunken Master lost. It's almost like they wrote him to lose after he got kicked that one time. It was like, he's done there. Like, let's make that the end of the battle. It was weird. Like, that guy was obviously better than Danny Rand was. And if they just had the show be every other episode, he fights a new master in different martial arts, it'd been great. But I think you would need to have then an actor who actually knew martial arts. And they didn't. They had a guy who trained, I guess, for months, or I assume, because he definitely was able to act like he maybe knew martial arts, but I don't know, it was weird. The fight scenes were all way better in Daredevil. Like, even though Daredevil's a different kind of fighter, and I get they were trying to go with, like, he's smooth because he knows martial arts or kung fu, but I don't know, like, not even the kung fu was good in this kung fu TV show. That's the problem.
Well, it kind of sucks.
And Danny Rand has to be, if he's to be paired with Luke Cage, Luke Cage gets to be the sulky kind of steady character, where Danny Rand then has to be able to play off that being a little bit more, I don't know, upbeat and fun. Not necessarily like Tony Stark, like, quippy, but he at least needs to be have a way to play off of, like, an Abbott and Costello. One's a straight guy, one's a funny guy. You need that, and that's what like Heroes for Hire are. Like, that those guys play together really nicely because, you know, one's serious and one's not as serious, and they just, if these guys got together, like, I think they would just cry and drink whiskey or something. I don't know.
Right, I heard he's supposed to be, like, kind of Dalai Lama-esque, like, very zen but funny about it.
Yeah, and the first couple episodes seemed like they were going that way, and then just it got, like, it just, it was weird. He got really bogged down in his own, like, trying to be serious. And I'm like, just make Danny... Why couldn't that have been the one weird one that they just were like... He shows up in this, you know, superhero outfit and is just fighting the hand. He shows up, like have him instead of, like, abandoning his post in Kunlun, which isn't even what his character does in the comic book. So it's like, why do they even write that storyline in there just to make it worse? Just, like, showing up and, like, he already knows the hand is part of, you know, in his company. Like, he comes back. She's trained 15 years. They're like, the hand is infiltrated Rand Enterprises, where you grew up or whatever. So now go back and take him out. And that could have been the whole show in outfit. And people are like, who are you? He's like, oh, I'm Danny Rand. Like, he has to do the dual parts, but he's not afraid to tell people, I'm the Iron Fist and I'm this cool. You're in a world where Iron Man exists in this universe. It wouldn't be weird. And the Hulk and Captain America, Spider-Man is in that New York right now on YouTube. Yet it's weird for him to be in costume. It's a kind of spider outfit, right?
Yeah. And Finn put his foot in his mouth bad.
Oh, yeah, he really. Sure did. I was like, that is not why this show is bad, dude. Don't do that.
Yeah.
People watch Batman and Iron Man all the time and don't care.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, again, he's being super defensive about that. My problem began, like, with these Netflix shows. I mean, I watched Daredevil the whole season, first season, and I enjoyed it. But I was getting annoyed that I had to wait all the way till the 13th episode to see him in costume. And this black costume was okay, but it would have been nicer if they would have brought him in, like, maybe the 3rd episode or 4th episode. Just give him his red costume and let him be Daredevil, who he's supposed to be. It feels like these... And I guess it's like Arrow and all these other Supergirl and stuff like that, where it's a long show and you really have to care about the characters in order to really enjoy the series. And I guess I just don't.
I don't know. I think... see what you're saying, but Supergirl got her episode, her outfit in the first episode because they realized she's different. Like, well, yeah. Arrow slowly.
Oh no, no,
he had to win, but.
Yeah, no, that and Flash too. He had his
suit pretty quick.
Yeah,
it's just like, you know, quick. And they get it, right? Like, those shows are different than Arrow.
Well, but
they're all in the same universe.
Even with Arrow, they kind of have what I think a lot of serial TV has lost these days, because it has its serial element. There's the meta plot for the season, but it's something that it acts more like Buffy or old, like Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where there was a meta plot for the season going on, but you could just watch an episode or two and get a complete story. And you don't get that with the Netflix series.
No, you definitely have to watch all 13. And 13, I still think, for almost all the shows, is 3 episodes too many.
Yep.
They could probably cut about 3 episodes for all of those shows still have pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, again, you order a pizza or something like that, and they said, well, instead of, you can't have a slice, you have to have the whole pie. And it's just too much. And that's what I feel like these Netflix are like. At least, like, release less episodes and release them, like, maybe on a weekly basis if it's possible. I don't like that they're all out there for some reason in my mind. It's almost like when you watch one episode, you're like, well, I gotta watch the next one. Unless it sucks like Iron Fist, but maybe it's just a mental thing for me, but it just kind of drives me crazy that they're all out there. And I guess also because people are reviewing them too, and you don't want to be left behind, like, with other people that are reviewing it, and you're like, all right, so they're all out here, I'm going to have to basically go through them as fast as I can. I know you did that, Taylor. Like, how long did it take you to go through Iron Fist?
It wasn't on purpose, to be honest. I mean, I got home like at like 10:30 one night after going to a show, and I was like, I'll start Iron Fist, I guess. And then it was 4 a.m., and I was like, I've watched a lot of Iron Fist. And then I was already halfway-ish done with the season, so I figured the next day I might as well just burn through it. I had stuff to do, so I got all the way to the last episode, and I was like, great, when I go home tonight, I'm going to watch the last episode, and I don't think the show is that bad. It was okay. Like, you know, I got through it, and it was fine. Like, I didn't hate it, and then that last episode was just so bad that it just put a sour taste in the whole rest of the season for me.
See, and I didn't realize that. I thought it was gradually getting worse. But
no. Like, I think the episodes 10 through 12 were fine. I was like, Maybe just they only saw the first half of the season, and so things are finally coming together. There's actually an interesting kind of subplot going on here, and then it just, like, they had so many weird, dumb, twisty reveal change crap going on, along with Finn Jones just, like, chewing the scenery with his really bad temper tantrums in that 13th episode that you're just like, oh, the show's terrible.
Yeah. Maybe they'll learn from Stranger Things and, like, realize they can condense a story into 8 episodes and not have to...
Yeah, like Legion. I wish they were watching Legion right now, because that's only 8 episodes, and that show is so good. That's one of my favorite shows maybe ever.
I am so far behind on TV. I am like 5 or 6 episodes behind in Arrowverse. Haven't watched Legion. Haven't watched any of...
Honestly, what we should be talking about is how good Legion is, and that everyone should be watching it. And I feel like nobody's watching that show, but it's so good. I think maybe people are watching that show because it's inaccessible. But
was it on FX?
It's FX, but it is on Hulu. So it's the only time an FX show has ever been on Hulu, and it comes out on Sundays after the Wednesday episode. So you have to wait like 4 days. But it is on. I didn't know this until a friend came to visit and was like, let's watch. I was like, I can't. I have FX. They're like, oh, it's on Hulu. And I was like, get out of town. So that's important to know, because it's it's easier to access than previously thought. And honestly, it's probably the best X-Men thing next to Logan that's ever come out. Oh, and it's not cool. Even the X-Men. The best, best mutant-themed Marvel property.
It's really good.
The music, it's done by the guy that did Fargo on TV, which that show is so good. And it just, it's that guy, and just like the acting is really good. It did mess up Beauty and the Beast for me a little bit, because the guy who is Legion is the Beast. And
it's Dan Stevens?
Yeah, and every time I saw the Beast, I was like, uh-oh, watch out, he's got some problems, man. He's gonna just bump into the floor or something weird. So it was just kind of weird for me, because they were so close. I just watched all those Legions, and like I was watching Beauty and the Beast, but it that show, I mean, cinematography wise, music wise, story wise, the way that they tell a story about a guy who has sort of schizophrenia and make you just almost as confused as he is, not sure what's real and what's not real. It's so interesting.
Does it keep the Wes Anderson vibe
the whole
time?
Yeah. Which I love too. Like, I'm a big Wes Anderson guy. I mean, it kind of changes throughout the show. Like, the first couple episodes are real Wes Anderson-y, and then it kind of changes a little bit, but there are like random musical interludes or like kind of weird stuff done that's very Wes Anderson-like. It's just a weird show, and they're able to be so weird because the main character that you're supposed to be kind of paying attention to doesn't know what's real and what's not. And so they could do whatever they want and be like, you know, sometimes like some of the weirder elements of it reminds me of some of the weirder elements of like Twin Peaks kind of stuff, where you're just like, wow, that's weird, but I kind of like it. Like, I don't know why there's this guy dancing backwards in this weird zigzag room, but fine, you know.
All right, so
I should watch Legion.
Skip Iron Fist and watch Legion.
Oh yes.
All right, so that's all we got to say about that. we're going to get into Star Wars Rebels, I guess the last couple episodes. So Taylor's going to take a break, and we'll text him when we're done, because we're going to be a little spoiler heavy. All right, guys, so what did you think of the last couple episodes? I guess we should start with the Darth Maul one, which was, I got it right here. Twin Sons.
This might have been one of my favorite pieces of Star Wars moments, like, and it really was surprising. It felt right with the characters, and that, you know, the whole time it's playing, you know, the best piece of Star Wars music. I forget the name of it, but the setting of the Two Suns is just Williams at his best. It's absolutely beautiful. And
I think it's Luke's theme, isn't it?
Is it Luke's theme? I thought it had a name on the track, but you're finally getting to see a confrontation between Maul and Kenobi after, what, 30 years since their original conflict? And that's not the, like, spoiler is, you know, it's over in a second. Obi-Wan just has had it and just cuts him down in one move. And it's unexpected. It's a fitting end for Maul. And, you know, just finally get rid of a character who kind of got redeemed a little bit by this show. Like, you know, they tried to do some stuff with him in Clone Wars, but they just kind of messed it up with the, because of the way the whole, you know, season ending and the way it did with their losing a season of what they wanted. And they weren't doing great with it, but, and then he just seemed more driven and more fleshed out over this season of Rebels, and, you know, him finally dying by Kenobi's hand, and, you know, finding out that, you know, Kenobi is still planning the, you know, to take down the Emperor, and feeling kind of at peace with that, it really, really sat great at the end of that episode, I think.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the episode too. I liked the fact that, well, the parts that Kenobi were in. The other stuff was kind of standard Rebels. Everybody tells Ezra not to go, and goes anyway. But the part with Kenobi and Maul, in some ways, it was just a fitting send-off to Maul. Because you're right, they really did flesh him out a heck of a lot more. And Darth Maul is never a character I was that interested in until Rebels. Because when he showed up in Episode 1... let's face it, how many lines did he have? I mean, I guess you could count the words on your fingers. He had a very cool lightsaber fight, but there really wasn't all that much else to him at all. He was just somebody there for them to fight at the end. Chase them a little and then fight at the end. Clone Wars, I never really got into the Clone Wars. I kind of heard a little bit how they brought him back and his brother. And eventually Sidious took them both out or something. But once he showed up in Rebels, I thought they had a nice twist on him. Like, yeah, he was a Sith, but he's not looking to rule the galaxy. He's just pissed now. He's all about vengeance, and he wants to get even with Palpatine for what he did. And the scene when he's facing off with Kenobi, it's so much tension right there, and the fact that Maul jumps on the attack, and someone else pointed out to me that he went for the same move on Kenobi that he did with Qui-Gon, with giving him the headbutt with the hilt of the sabers. And Kenobi had seen that, and that the fact Kenobi saw, okay, there's his opening, and just took him down in one stroke. It kind of reminded me of the end of Kill Bill 2. With the five-finger grip.
Yeah.
Or the five steps, or I don't remember what they exactly called it. But it reminded me a little bit of that here it is, as much as he prepared, there was just one move that just took him out. But I also really liked the fact that here it is, Kenobi takes him out and basically cradles him until he dies. And that was really just such a touching moment of the difference between the Jedi and the Sith, I thought. That it was really done in not a super powerful yelling moment. It was done in a very quiet moment. And I really thought that was a great scene. And then, of course, the end scene where he's looking over and he sees Luke running, you know, and his aunt is calling him. That was a nice touch, too, as a nod off of what Kenobi's doing all for the rest of the time between Rebels and Episode 4.
Which can't be more than a year at this point, I think.
Yeah, it can't be. It's the clock is ticking down, but we've had the conversation before of why they could do a season 4 of Rebels.
Yeah.
But I really thought this was a good episode, and the only reason it was a really good episode was because of the Kenobi moments.
And I love that when they're just facing each other and down, it just felt like that tension moment with the plasma gates. It just mirrored back to Episode 1.
Yeah, it really was. It really was good. It was one of the highlights of this season of Rebels.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, when the day it was coming out,
they had leaked the last 6 minutes of the episode, and I sent it to you guys, and I had already seen it because I love spoilers. And I was blown away. It was like the last 6 minutes, and I was like, oh my god, this guy, Steve Stanton, does the voice for Obi-Wan. Perfect. Perfect Alec Guinness. And I just got the chills just listening to him. And then you saw him fight Maul. It was very quick and all that. And then, like what you guys said, like, Maul was somewhat redeemed, and he also kind of left, I guess, into the great unknown, knowing that there's still that Obi-Wan was guarding the Chosen One, and that, you know, it's, there was still that possibility that the Emperor would be defeated. So I thought that was kind of cool. Then I saw the whole episode, and my opinion started to change. Ezra's just a pain in the ass. He really annoys me. It's kind of like what Jack said. It's like Ezra's always told, don't do this, and he does it anyway. I think he's been doing that through all the season, and I'm getting a little tired of it. It's just so annoying. I mean, his relationship with Darth Maul, and he's like, but maybe he can teach me something. It's like, look at him. He looks like the devil, you know? I mean, why would you trust someone like that? And because of him trusting him, Kanan lost his eyesight. It just was a whole mess. It just kind of like, I don't know, like, that's a whole different story, but I'm just not a fan of Ezra. Ezra drives me crazy. My problem is, I loved, unlike you, Jack, I loved Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace, and I loved that whole lightsaber battle between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and him. And what I liked about him, though, was he was mysterious. He did have, like, one line, I think, in that whole movie, and I even forget what it was. But that's the whole thing is, it's like, he didn't say anything, and that was kind of cool. Like, it kind of made him mysterious. Then he, and we all saw him die. He got cut in half, and then he probably went down a couple of miles down some chute and all that stuff. So he was dead. But they had to bring him back in Clone Wars, which I did not appreciate. And then he never shut up. It's like, as soon as he got, like, his, what did he have, like a spider bottom at first, or spider legs?
Oh yeah, some sort of robot legs.
Yeah, and then eventually he got his real legs back, and then this guy just couldn't shut up. Even, like, in this season, I thought it was really bad. It's like, again, you want to be mysterious. And I remember, like, in one of the episodes, this guy was wearing a t-shirt. It's like, this isn't the Darth Maul that I knew. The Darth Maul I knew, again, was very dark, very sinister. The one thing that, in this season with Darth Maul, that it kind of made me wonder was, you know, was he really against the Empire? Especially if you didn't see the Clone Wars, you really couldn't tell. Was he playing Ezra almost like, you know, it's like, well, now I have him, brought him to the dark side, and then he goes to his master, and it's like, look what I did. You know, I turned one of these Jedis, you know, onto our side, onto the dark side. I mean, that was part of what I was thinking, is like, maybe he's becoming buddy-buddy with him to bring him over to the dark side. I just couldn't trust him. And again, he turned on Kanan. And, you know, like, he blinded him, and I think, like, a couple episodes later, he was like, well, I didn't mean to blind you. It's like, I meant to kill you! You know, and he tried to, like, kill him, like, a second time. Yeah, I just wasn't a fan of Maul being on the show, and I thought he was way too emotional. Like, again, when he saw Obi-Wan in The Phantom Menace, he was not like that at all. I mean, he was angry, an angry person, but just in this one, he just never shut up. Like, in this episode, he's like, Kenobi! It just, it seemed so unlike Darth Maul to me. I thought the battle at the end was pretty cool. I liked how it happened. A lot of people complain. It's like, oh my god, it was like 3 seconds. But that's how good Obi-Wan is, you know? I mean, I think that to me showed me, it was like, wow, this guy is really good. And I thought that was actually kind of cool. Yeah, I guess I would have liked a few, maybe a couple of more seconds, see them battling and all that. But it was well done. But it did bother me that Ezra ended up being there, and Obi-Wan goes, you shouldn't be here. And then he's like, now go home. It just drives me crazy every time Ezra does that. And he does that, and you know he's going to do that in season 4 for most of the episodes. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I definitely liked the last 6 minutes. Wasn't 100% crazy about the rest, though. People that liked Darth Maul and people that liked the old Obi-Wan Kenobi, yeah, they would probably really appreciate that episode. All right, but we had the season finale recently, and that one was called Zero Hour. It was a two-parter, and a lot of stuff happened in that two-parter.
It felt like a standard season finale, and I mean, I know it's part of its work kids show, so I have to, you know, kind of look at it through that lens, but it was good enough, but it was kind of paint by the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot because I always like a good spaceship battle, and I liked Thrawn coming in and basically bottlenecking them all in the system there. I thought that was cool. When Maul and Mothma told Ezra, you're on your own, sorry, I can't help you, kid. I just, for that, I'm like, really? Really? These are people you know who just bailed you out a couple of episodes ago. I was like, I was surprised at. I liked seeing Sabine and the Mandalorians come in. I thought that scene of them running, fighting on the hull was just very cool. It was good to see space troopers, too. So I really enjoyed that. I thought it was fun. But one thing that stuck me is it really kind of was like an Empire Strikes Back ending. I mean, considering, yeah, some of them got away.
They lost
how many ships did they lose? I mean, they lost a couple of their Nebula B frigates.
The carrier.
I still never understand the rebels bringing transport ships along on battles. I never understood that. You know, those big egg-shaped ones.
Yeah.
I think they just have to take whatever ships they can get, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
they were evacuating a base on that time, too.
Right. But it was a pretty good episode. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Bendu, I'm glad, is kind of done. That was a weird character, and I know they're trying to play up that Force mysticism, because they did a lot of that in Clone Wars as well. But, like, he was just weird. And I'm kind of glad he's done.
Yeah. Yeah, like, my problem with this episode, though, like Jack said, I love those space battles. Those were really cool. Especially watching them with the lights out in my place. I was like, damn, that looks good. But everything always works for the rebels. You know, like, it's like, Kanan's like, I'm going to go out and talk to the Bendu. He might say no, but I have no other choice. You know he's going to say yes, and he's going to show up at the end. And like, it's just like, it's like, don't even bother showing me the stuff. I know he's going to show up at the end. And the same thing with Ezra. It's like, I got to go out and look for help. And yeah, he goes to Sabine, and like at first they're like, well, we're sorry, but it's probably not in our best interest to help you. And he's like, all right, well, then I'm going back. It's like, wait, we'll go with you. It's just like, you know all this stuff is going to happen. That it's just so, like Ron said, paint by the numbers. And it just bothers me. Like, there's no real sacrifice. And with the Bendu, I mean, the one thing I liked about the Bendu is, like, he didn't favor, you know, the light side of the Force or the dark side of the Force. He was kind of in the middle. So I thought, all right, he's going to come and he's going to destroy them all. I said, that'd be cool. That'd be a great ending. I mean, I knew there was going to be season 4. But it would have been nice if the Bendu basically went nuts and killed not only the Empire, but killed a lot of rebels too, including, you know, some of the major characters. Like, maybe, unfortunately, Zeb. I like Zeb, but they did nothing with him this year. Or Kanan or something like that, you know. Where, again, he's unpredictable because he really has no side. I didn't like Admiral Thrawn this season. He really didn't do anything for me. I don't know if it was the voice actor, but I just kind of felt him boring. throughout the whole thing.
He is a, but if I mean, going back to even, you know, Zahn's writing, he is just very calm. You know, he doesn't react to anything. I think he, at some points, he even overreacts to the way he was in the book. I mean, even when he's killed in the books, it's just like, oh, they stabbed me.
Yeah, exactly. he's very cerebral, and you're right, he's not prone to outbursts at all.
I think they did some great stuff with him. I think like they kept his art and his tactic, the way he talks about tactics, and the Isomiri were in the background of his office, even if they were just carvings. I thought there was some cool stuff with him. I think they made him a little too easy to defeat at the end. I hope they do a little bit more with him next season. I would have liked to see the Nogri, you know, with him, because I thought
that would
they,
be cool.
Like, the little killer Ewok things were amazing. So yeah, there's a lot more they could have done with him, but I think they did an okay job, because I know they really consulted with Zahn again to what they were gonna, how would you put him into this. The Interdictor cruisers were a really cool touch. Were those ever actually on film before, or do I only remember those from the books?
Only remember them from the books.
I don't remember if they may be in Clone Wars or somewhere else, but they were really good there. And my wife was watching with me, and she's like, this battle looks familiar. I'm like, well, most of these, because it looks kind of like the Battle of Scarif, with the same ships, kind of same type of ships being in it. But overall, I think it was a fine season finale for what it was. I would have, liked to see a little bit more, but who knows how we're going to keep going with this.
Yeah, but getting back to being a predictable, Agent Kallus, it's like, all right, he gets caught. Kill him right now. That's it. Nope. We're going to keep you alive. And, of course, he escapes. There's never really any sacrifice going on with that crew. It's like, there's always a happy ending, and even though, you know, you guys might have said it's more of an Empire-type ending, nothing happened to the crew of the Ghost. Everyone's happy, everyone's together, and they'll come back for...
Well, you did lose Sato, and...
He was a big character,
And did you think Sato was a big character?
I think he was probably one of the biggest supporting characters not on the crew. I think he was kind of like... You know, he was maybe he was probably like the fifth Beatle for their group.
Really? So I don't remember him too much. I mean, was he in a lot of episodes?
He was in quite a few.
Wasn't he all the way back to season one a little bit? Or, no, he was beginning of season two.
My memory's really bad. I mean, you guys are probably right. I mean, I remember him in a couple episodes, but I didn't realize that he had that much of a role in it.
I mean, the last season finale felt a lot more impactful because of everything that happened. So this one to feel a little bit more of a letdown after that.
But that didn't answer anything either. It's like, you know, you figured, all right, it's going to be Darth Vader versus Ahsoka, and somebody's going to die. Nope. Well, at least they got rid of Maul. I mean, I give them credit for that. That kind of gave finality to the character. Another thing I was going to point out too is like Kanan taking down those AT-ATs. The only thing that kind of bothers me with that is he just took them down so easily. He just kind of chopped their legs off. And I think back to Empire, it's like, well, Luke probably could have done the same thing.
But Luke had zero training at that point.
Yeah, I guess so.
He does cut right into it with the lightsaber, so.
Yeah. I'd say it was a good episode, especially the space battles were great. I wish they would just do a mix of just that. It'd probably be like about 10 minutes, but it was nice. It was nice to see. All right, so that's it for Rebels Season 3. It's over. Looking forward to Season 4. Taylor's back, so now we're going to get into listener email. We just got one for this week. It's from Dapper Dan. And he asks, bluntly, which wins? Wolverine's claws? Captain America's shield? Thing's body? A lightsaber? And I threw this one in. What about the one ring to rule them all?
Oh, totally different. You can't throw that one in.
I did.
Magic, and it doesn't really do anything.
Well, no, I was watching Fellowship the other day, and Gimli went to destroy the ring, and they're like, "You can't destroy it," you know. So they look pretty tough.
Are we on like is if this is the same universe, then like the lava from Mustafar, can that destroy the ring?
Yeah,
is that like
is the like plasma the saber I don't think enough?
Well, it couldn't, because the ring could only be destroyed in the
in the fires of Mount Doom.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. So, but let's say that we're a Jedi. Wouldn't you just Jedi like force the ring right off someone's finger and just like toss that little beast right in that volcano? If lightsabers exist, then I guess I'm getting too much in the weeds. The answer is, this is an impossible question.
All right. We'll get rid of Dapper Dan. We'll get rid of the one ring.
Okay.
There are metals that can deflect the lightsaber, so you know, I don't know if adamantium or vibranium would fall into that.
Yeah, this is like you're mixing up things that don't make sense. I would like to say Cap Shield is probably the strongest of the metals, because Cap Shield is adamantium and vibranium. So,
and Thing's body, Wolverine's cut him several times.
Yep,
So I think Cap Shield could definitely block Wolverine's claws, because adamantium can't cut adamantium.
It has. I mean, Cap Shield stands up, and we saw from the opening scenes of Episode 1, you know, a lightsaber can go through even a blast door, but it takes them a while. So I would say Cap Shield could stand up against a lightsaber if it had to.
But isn't Cap Cap Shield, hasn't that broken a couple of times?
Yeah, well, that's just gotten to be a trope lately in the last few years, that no one is really bad enough until they break Cap Shield.
Yeah, I think originally, I think if you mix vibranium and adamantium, that seems like that's why it's like it's impossible to break, right? Adamantium can't, once it's melted, it can no longer be broken. We learned that, unless I guess you superheat ninja swords. Or have an adamantium bullet.
Yeah, I mean, you have to take into account there was an issue when I guess it was a three-way fight between Cap, Iron Man, and Thor when he was imbued with the Odin Force. And at one point, he's about to polish off Iron Man, and Cap steps in and takes an Odin-empowered Thor. Mjolnir hits Cap Shield and puts a dent in it. Didn't break it, but just put a dent in it. So if it could stand up to something like that, I'd say a lightsaber would be no problem.
Yeah, what about Mjolnir? How about that as far as... is that indestructible?
I think it's even more indestructible than the One Ring. I don't think you can destroy Mjolnir. It's just basically a god power in just
yeah, because he who wields Mjolnir becomes the God of Thunder, right? So it's not that Thor is the God of Thunder, it's that whoever is wielding Mjolnir is the God of Thunder, and Thor just is the wielder of Mjolnir. So yeah, like what Ron was saying, it's basically it's a objectification of the God of Thunder and imbues the power onto people. So I still think Cap Shield, I mean, if we're doing like a single hit against everything, or what could like, you know, defend in a battle pretty well, I think the Cap Shield would do you fine. But if you're fighting a Jedi with Cap Shield, Cap throws a shield at you, just grab it midair and like let it drop. So it also depends on which Cap Shield we're talking about. Are we talking the Vibranium Cap Shield from the MCU? Because Wolverine's claws could rip right through that little baby real quick. I would think. I mean, they kind of made vibranium, those two metals combined in the show. Like, vibranium's the strongest metal, and it has anti-vibration policies. And it's like, well, no, one's one and one's the other. That's why Captain's Shield is what it is, but I don't know. It depends. Like, we have to have, I think, more background on all these different pieces.
All right, we'll go with Captain America's Shield. That seems like a pretty tough little guy. All right, anyway, let's wrap this up. Ron, can you tell listeners where they can find you?
Sure, you could tweet us at Nerd Alert Pod. Sorry, you know, I haven't really had time to tweet from that. I keep meaning to get more on it. I need to get maybe a better version of a Twitter app so I can switch between them easier. And you can find me at Bracey's Butler.
And Taylor?
You could find me at TCatch on Twitter. It's TK4TCH. Or you can check out my comic book YouTube show at Comics Chat with Gat on YouTube, or at Comics Chat WGAT on Twitter to talk to us about stuff.
And Jack?
Well, I'm actually out of Stone Age, so I would say the Renaissance.
Yeah, you said that last week.
I did? Oh, well, Ron wasn't here to hear. But if you like, you could send me an email at jack@wdwnt.com.
Yep, you can send me an email too at joe@wdwnt.com. And you can look at me on Facebook. I'm just Joe Hogarty. Just do a search there. Anyway, so with that, this will be the end of Episode 5 of Season 3 of WDWNT Nerd Alert. And until next time, peace out, guys.
Good night.
See you later.
Stay nerdy.